U.S. diplomats around the world were told Tuesday not to post or retweet about the dismissal of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson this week. The guidance came shortly after President Trump abruptly announced in a tweet that he had fired Tillerson and tapped CIA Director Mike Pompeo to replace him to run the State Department. It's our first item up for discussion on this Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What do you make of the firing of Tillerson? Are staff shakeups in the White House disrupting government's ability to get things done, or are new perspectives good for business? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We have analysis this week from Keen Winters, a small business owner from Schofield and the coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Keen, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Tony Palmieri is here as well. He's a communication studies professor at UW Oshkosh. He blogs at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. Tony, welcome back.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Well, it's been no secret that Tillerson and President Trump have had a rocky relationship. The two publicly clashed over finding a diplomatic solution to the situation in North Korea. And then there was the whole gutting of the State Department and Tillerson being blamed for that. So starting with you, Keen Winters, what was this a needed staffing change on the part of President Trump?
I think a lot of people feel it was a needed change, and I think it takes real leadership to make that change. If you've ever been involved in being a supervisor, firing people is no fun. A lot of people hesitate. I think it's a good move to get the president and the State Department ready for what might be historic negotiations with North Korea.
Tony, your thoughts on this move and the firing in a tweet?
It seems to be part of a pattern of President Trump that he only seems to appreciate cabinet officials that feed into his delusions, let's say. A real leader wants diversity of views in the cabinet, and apparently because Tillerson was supportive of the Iran deal, he had to go. And, of course, one thing that you left out was that Tillerson had referred to the president as a moron and had never really backed away from that. I don't think that Rex Tillerson was a very effective Secretary of State. As you said, he'd gutted the State Department. He was one of the least transparent Secretaries of State we've ever had in that position. But I think Mr. Pompeo, if he is confirmed, would be much worse. But Pompeo, unlike Tillerson, does seem to feed into the delusions of President Trump, and that seems to be his main criteria for getting selected.
Well, Keen, how would you rate Tillerson's performance as Secretary of State?
I would say it's been mediocre. He certainly has no standout achievements that you would highlight at all. And whereas I think people are pleased with Mike Pompeo, the job he's done at the CIA has gained him some respect there. There were, of course, some bad relations between Trump and the intelligence community, and he managed to smooth some of those over. So I think in addition to being a loyalist, he's a competent civil servant, and that's to be rewarded.
Well, so Tony, what are you optimistic about the direction then that the American foreign policy might take under Secretary of State Pompeo?
No, I don't think so. He's again, to me, it seems like his main qualification for this position is that he tells the president what the president wants to hear. And I don't think any of us would dispute that the moment he moves in an independent direction, he'll probably be gone also. I think it's going to be a rocky confirmation hearing for Mr. Pompeo. I mean, he is pretty much a hawk. He's actually called for the death penalty for Edward Snowden without even, without even giving any credence at all to what Snowden did and whether it might have actually helped the United States with his whistleblowing. So I'm just concerned about where foreign policy is headed. I mean, obviously with President Trump, you have someone who from day to day or sometimes from hour to hour changes his views on issues. So I don't see this going well.
Well, Keene, Deputy CIA Director Gina Haspel would take over for Pompeo at the agency, but she's been sharply criticized by some Democrats for the role she played in the CIA's now banned torture programs. Is that something lawmakers should take into account when considering her nomination?
They should certainly take it into account, but along with a career going all the way back to 1985 in the intelligence community, she certainly would be an intelligence professional who's been involved in every aspect of the organization. So I think that gives her a strong resume to be the next CIA director.
Well, Tony, lots of moving parts here. We're hearing rumors that more administration officials could be on the chopping block in the coming days. News reports out this morning, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster could be out. We've also heard rumblings about Chief of Staff John Kelly, Veterans Affairs Secretary, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Ben Carson. So with these pending departures, or if they happen at all, we do not know, are they disrupting government's ability to get things done? Or is this how the Trump cabinet does it?
Well, yeah, there's disruption. But one last thing, if I may, on Gina Haspel. I think you had said that it was primarily Democrats that were raising objections to her participation in torture programs in Thailand. I think in her confirmation hearing, we're going to find a substantial number of Republicans that come out against her. There's a substantial block of Republican senators who do not believe that the United States should turn a blind eye toward her past, that they believe that torture is anti-American and what have you. So I think we're going to find a strong bipartisan opposition to her. As far as the rest of the cabinet goes, as I've suggested, it looks like what Donald Trump wants in a cabinet are people who tell him what he wants to hear at the moment. And I think that's a very destructive way to run government. I mean, the most extreme version of this was Mr. Navarro, one of his economics advisors, who actually told the press, and has not backed away from it, that his job as an economist is to provide Donald Trump with the analytics that prove Mr. Trump's intuitions. I mean, think of how contemptuous that is for the whole idea of truth and accuracy. He's basically admitting that his job is to essentially maybe even make up data that prove that what Mr. Trump is saying is accurate. If President Trump expects that from all cabinet members, that I think is a very, very destructive thing for our government.
Keene, we'll get your reaction in just a moment, but to first say we're with Keene Winters, small business owner from Schofield, coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Tony Palmieri is here, professor of communication studies at UW-Oshkosh, blogging at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. You can join in at 800-642-1234 to Week in Review. Are staff shakeups in the White House disrupting government's ability to get things done, or is this the new way of business? What do you make of President Trump's firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson? And what national political story is on your mind this week? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Keene, if National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster is actually shown the door, it would be the second National Security Advisor to go since President Trump took office. Recall Michael Flynn was forced out in February last year. What do you make of these staff shakeups?
Well, I think you want top people, and you want them pulling all in one direction. Some analysis and diversity of views is nice, but after Walt, you need to get things done, and you need to be pulling in the same direction, and you need to be top performers. And, you know, Ben Carson's a great guy, but, you know, this furniture thing, you got to go, what was he thinking? And, you know.
And
Trump is a tough boss.
Remind us about the furniture thing, as you say.
Well, he ended up buying a bunch of furniture to redo his office that was very expensive and beyond the budget, and it got billed to the government. And
And he's not unique in this. There have been other reports of cabinet members perhaps living high on the hog in the job.
Well, the other thing is you've had a couple people who have essentially billed excessive travel expenses to the government. And when that's come to light, the president has fired them, and rightly so. And you have to say sometimes, what were these people thinking? But, you know, I want a boss who fires people when they're not top notch. I want top notch people in these positions, and if they're not cutting the mustard, then it's time to show them the door.
Well, let's turn our attention to the congressional seat in Western Pennsylvania, where it looks like at this moment Democrat Connor Lamb appears to have won, although we still don't know whether his Republican challenger will ask for a recount with only a few hundred votes separating them. For context, President Trump won that district by about 20 points in November of 2016. So, Keene, should Connor Lamb's victory here be a cause for concern for the GOP?
Well, I think it should be a little bit of a cause for concern. These are, of course, midterm elections, but I think it illustrates to me how much candidates matter. Connor Lamb fundraised his opponent 5-1. Most districts have a 20-point swing in them, believe it or not, and that's why I always find the arguments that about redistricting quite specious.
Tony, your thoughts on Connor Lamb and what happened in this election?
Well, since President Trump took office, the Democrats have flipped 40 Republican seats, and some of them in deep, deep red areas like Alabama with the U.S. Senate seat, and now Pennsylvania 18. I think the Pennsylvania 18, if the results hold up, is a stunning rebuke of President Trump. He came out there and campaigned for Mr. Saccone. Mr. Saccone branded himself as being more Trump than Trump. Mr. Lamb came out against the tax cuts, which was President Trump's really only major legislative achievement. So this was a flat-out rejection of the Trump administration from my point of view. And to win in a district that went for Donald Trump by 20 points, I think obviously the Democrats have to be very, very encouraged by that. And what the Republicans need to realize is every single seat is in play in November.
Well, I want to.
That's what this means.
I want to pick your brain on this, Tony Palmieri. During his campaign, Connor Lamb made it clear that he would not support Nancy Pelosi to House Democrats, and he played down his connections to his national party. Is this an approach you'd expect other Democratic office seekers to follow?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think there is a very powerful and growing strain in the Democratic Party that the leadership needs to change, that they've simply been there too long. But if you look at Connor Lamb's overall positions, I mean, he was in support or is in support of the Affordable Care Act. He was against the Trump tax cuts. He wants universal background checks on gun purchases. I mean, he's what I would call a moderate Democrat, and as Keene suggested, candidates matter. I mean, one thing I really liked about the Connor Lamb candidacy, and I do hope that Democrats draw this lesson, is Connor Lamb had no interest in going on MSNBC or CNN or Fox or any national network. He was out there going door to door and meeting the voters in his district. I think the lesson there is a very good one. If you want to win a local race, get to meet your voters and stop giving all your attention to the national media.
Let's bring in Nate now in Milwaukee. Nate, go ahead. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I was going to mention that, as you're right, candidates matter. The particular area had people who valued unions and how unions take care of people. And the Republican who was running was an anti-union Republican, and the Democrat, as moderate as he tried to be, was someone who supported unions. I would also just like to point out that in a functioning democracy, small d, it shouldn't be required to have an embarrassing president so that the other party actually has a chance to win what used to be swing districts. And that's a counterpoint to the idea that gerrymandering doesn't matter. It still does.
Well,
it's just now you've got a counter wave because of what we've got in the White House.
Let's bring Keene in to Nate there. Counterpoint, Keene, your reflections on how Connor Lamb won this.
Well, I'm a big believer in door knocking. When I used to be more involved in running campaigns, back in, 10, 12 years ago, if you mapped out a district, you would do something like look at the performance of J.B. Van Hollen versus the performance of Senate candidate Tim Michaels, and that'd sort of give you an idea what your Republican swing was in that district. And usually it was, a good 20 points. Voters still choose candidates, and the argument that candidates choose voters, I think, is a lot weaker than most people understand.
Republican leaders have come out with an explanation for Tuesday's special election in Pennsylvania. House Speaker Paul Ryan said Wednesday that Democrat Connor Lamb ran as a conservative. We're talking about it. Also this week, are the Russia investigations officially over? Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee called an end on Monday to their year-long investigation of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. We're also talking about that on Week in Review. Your thoughts are welcome to the table, 800-642-1234. How about the end of the Russia probe? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Our Week in Review guests are Keene Winters, Tony Palmieri, and you. We'll be back for more discussion in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. One day after House Republicans announced they were ending their Russia investigation with a 150-page report concluding there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, the committee's top Democrat, Adam Schiff, though, responded with a plan for continuing to investigate whether there was collusion with Russia. It's a discussion point on a busy Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What do you make of the national student walkout this week? How should Wisconsin lawmakers respond to a special session? 800-642-1234. Tony Palmieri is here. He's a communication studies professor at UW Oshkosh. Keene Winters is a small business owner from Schofield. He's coordinator of the center-right coalition of WASA. Turning our attention to the House Intelligence Committee and this the Russia probe, while the committee did not agree that Russia tried to interfere in the election, they did conclude there was no evidence of collusion, coordination, or conspiracy between the Trump campaign and the Russians. Keene, do you think this finally puts this issue of possible collusion to rest?
I think they made the right decision. Do I think that we're going to continue to hear from people like Adam Schiff? Probably. I think the next shoe to drop will be the Senate Intelligence Committee, and probably the Mueller investigation will go on. I think they made the right conclusion, but I'm sure we haven't heard the last of it.
Tony Palmieri, what do you make of that decision Monday?
Whenever I see the Republicans on that committee on television, to me they always seem like the captives in the hostage videos, you know, that they're being forced to say something that they know is not what they really believe. I mean, it's so blatantly political what they're doing. Of course, we expect politicians to act politically, but this is just so blatant for them to just parrot what Donald Trump has been saying in his tweets. But having said that, if I were advising the Democratic Party going into these midterm elections politically, I would say I don't think the Russia investigation should be at the top of their list. I would say let Mr. Mueller do his job. He's already got a bunch of indictments, and apparently now he's looking into President Trump's financial transactions. Hopefully he goes after his tax returns, because for me personally, Until we see Donald Trump's tax returns, it's going to be very, very difficult to make the strong, firm case for collusion. I do think that those tax returns will answer lots of questions. But I would just say that what the Democrats should do is make sure that the next phase of the Republican plan is not to shut down Mueller. They should fight that, but they should just struggle or argue that Mueller should be the one carrying this forward.
Well, Jerry in Glendale has thoughts on this. Jerry, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to check with your guests. An article was in the Washington Post within the last couple of days, and it basically indicated that any report from Robert Mueller's investigation will be going to the Justice Department. There's not going to be a public presentation of that report like there was during the Ken Starr investigation of Bill Clinton. And it would be up to the Justice Department to determine what, if any, aspect of that report by Mueller would be given to the public. I'd like to find out your guest thoughts if that's an accurate understanding.
Tony, you go first.
I had not read that article, Jerry, but I would say if that is accurate, Mr. Sessions has recused himself, so it would suggest that Mr. Rosenstein would be the one who would decide what goes public. And obviously we've seen that there's a threat that the Trump administration might try to get rid of Rosenstein, maybe for this very reason. But if it were up to me, I would like to see it become public without going first to the Justice Department. I'm not sure what Keene thinks about this.
Yeah, Keene, you can join in here.
And Tony seems to have an incredible insight into what people are thinking. I think it's a lot more straightforward than that. In this country, we still have a rule that you're innocent until proven guilty. So you're going to take the results of the investigation, and if there are no reason for and then it's going to go back to the Justice Department, whether they're going to decide whether charges should be pressed or not. If they're not going to press charges, then the results of the investigation probably shouldn't be public because they're just smearing somebody's reputation. And so that's the way it is they're going to determine whether there's significance and there's going to be charges, and we're not just going to put out these long statements that and essentially convict people in the eyes of the public when we can't do it in the courts.
Jerry, thanks for joining the conversation. Let's look at these new sanctions against Russia that came out yesterday, the punitive measures on 19 people and 5 entities over their alleged role in Russia's interference in the 2016 election. These sanctions represent the most significant move against Russia since President Trump took office. Tony, good move, bad move? What do you make of it?
Well, the issue about these sanctions for a long time has been whether President Trump will actually enforce them. I mean, for a long time, he seemed to be the key outlier among Republicans. And, because obviously the Congress had voted by a wide bipartisan majority a long time ago to put sanctions in place, and it seemed to be the Trump administration preventing it. So is this President Trump going into the midterm elections realizing that he's got to follow what the Congress said they wanted to do on sanctions? Will he try to get the government to drag its feet on them? So at this point, for me, this is all about what will Donald Trump do. Obviously, the more he drags his feet on it, it plays into the perception that, in fact, he is in debt to Vladimir Putin for some reason. So I do think that over the next month or so, we'll get some insight as to where the president actually stands on these sanctions.
Well, Rick in Park Falls has been waiting to join the conversation on this. Rick, go ahead.
Well, I would like to mention the fact that the National Rifle Association of America, let me emphasize the word America, is the oldest civil rights organization in the United States. They are interested in defending not only the Second Amendment, but other parts of the Constitution, such as the First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the Fourth Amendment, which is supposed to guarantee that police can't just burglarize your house and steal your firearms.
So what does parlay this into the Russia conversation, Rick?
Well, there's a Senate bill right now which attempts to make it illegal to have any kind of modifications to triggers on semi-automatic firearms would virtually make every semi-automatic firearm in the United States illegal, because people for 50 or 60 years have been involved in modifying the triggers on semi-automatic rifles to get a better trigger pull for target competition, for accuracy in long-range hunting, and for people like myself that have a physical disability, which makes it difficult to pull the trigger with
Rick, we're going to get into this conversation about what happened this week in gun violence, and thanks for calling there. Keen Winters, as we wrap up the Russia conversation here, any final thoughts?
Well, I think the president does suffer politically when he appears not to be tough on Russia. On the other hand, what I want the president to do is to be smart about Russia. And I don't think Congress necessarily is, in the sense that you want to discourage Vladimir Putin, and these kind of sanctions that hurt his inner circle really, I think, do bite. But you can't simply blanketly condemn or confront Russia, because that gives really Vladimir Putin a lot of domestic ammunition. I mean, railing against the United States is one of those ways he stays in power over there, and there is a significant Russian opposition, and we don't want them to essentially be demonized. So you have to, as a practical matter, walk a fine line. I do agree that there might be some political losses for Donald Trump doing that, but I'm glad he recognizes that simply being verbose and confronting Vladimir Putin isn't the right solution for this, whereas it may be the right solution or has been the right solution in North Korea.
You're with us on Week in Review with Keen Winters, who is a small business owner from Schofield, coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Tony Palmieri in the mix, professor of communication studies at UW-Oshkosh, blogging at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. You as well at 800-642-1234. What needs to be done to make schools safer in Wisconsin? A week of attention-grabbing headlines this week as students walk out of their schools. What do you make of that? 800-642-1234. Do you support the closure of the state's youth prison, Lincoln Hills? And if that facility does close, what needs to take its place? Join in the conversation or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's turn our attention now to across the country on Wednesday, when students walked out of their classrooms protesting against gun violence and what they see as congressional inaction on the issue of gun control. Here in Wisconsin, we saw thousands of students in Madison march on the state capitol, chanting the phrase, "Are we next?" So, Keen, what do you make of this movement, and was it appropriate for students to walk out?
Well, I think it was fun for students to walk out. And certainly it's fun
in what way? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's always cool to be part of a protest, and it's just a sort of a rite of passage, and it's fun. You know, I think they have the right to have their say, but at the end of the day, what we really do need to do is harden the defenses of schools, and it's not as, and things are not as easy as a 16 or 17 year old might think they are.
Tony, was this a rite of passage and fun, or is this the beginning of a sea change when it comes to gun control in America?
I think it's the beginning of a change, and I tell you, I found these students absolutely inspiring all over the country. I don't know whose quote it is, but it's getting a lot of play now. The quote that we're in this bizarre period in America where the children are acting like leaders and the leaders are acting like children. And I thought we saw that during the walkout. These kids are acting like leaders. And if you actually listen to what they're calling for, the main things they're calling for actually have majority support on all sides. You know, for example, universal background checks. I mean, about 80% of Republicans support that. A flat-out ban on assault rifles. According to the Pew Research Center, 54% of Republicans support that. right? And you know, 90% of Democrats. So it's not like these kids are calling for anything that does not have fairly widespread support. What they're running up against is the, you know, basically the NRA and other parts of the gun lobby essentially takeover of Congress. The pressing symbol of that was President Trump, who gets on TV and boasts about how, unlike the Republicans who he called out, he's not afraid of the NRA. He was going to unilaterally put an end to the bump stocks. And then 24 hours later, he completely reverses course, completely intimidated by the NRA and gun lobby.
Let's bring in, sorry to cut you off there. Let's bring in Adam in Platteville. Adam, go ahead.
Hello. I'm going to tell you guys a little story to give you some information. When I was 14 years old, Columbine happened, and I was one of the uncool kids. And as time proceeded, myself and the only other friend I had in the school were having a conversation about what had happened, and we talked about how finally somebody did something, so the jocks got theirs, and blah, blah, blah. And it was terrible. Don't get me wrong. I was young. But I know what it is to be in the shoes of someone that feels oppressed or beaten down. And then, as these conversations continued, my best friend actually brought up the statement, we should do something like this. And the whole copycat idea started to come to fruition. As this happened, I realized my best friend was serious. Like, this wasn't just some sick, twisted fantasy that we weren't going to act out or something like this. He was serious about wanting to do this. So at the age of 14, I had to go to my school administration, which had done me wrong over and over again, and tell them that my best friend, the only friend I had in the entire world, was thinking about doing this, was planning this action to shoot up our school. So then law enforcement gets involved. They do all their stuff. They did a great job. They investigated. He got expelled or suspended. It was the end of the year. They suspended him. He had to go through a bunch of psychological stuff.
So, Adam, where are we today on it then? As you see these students walk out, where are we?
Okay, so I was those students. I was in the position that they were in. And the next day after all of that happened and they had arrested him, I had to go back to that school. And I went back to a school that had no hardened defenses. And I went back to a school that had no armed security. And I prayed that day that he didn't show up angry looking for me as the first person. And you sit here and say, these kids are right. We shouldn't have some type of armed security. These kids are right. We shouldn't have AR-15s. These kids are right. We shouldn't have this. And I tell you what, I was more commonsensical at the age of 14 than these 17-year-olds are today.
Adam, I have to jump in. Yeah,
so I want to finish.
Okay.
They definitively do not understand, nor do a lot of people, what the Constitution and the Second Amendment is for. And it is for us as a people to have a right to defend ourselves.
Adam, thanks for the call. Let's get Tony to respond now. Tony, go ahead.
I think there are troubled people all over the world. We are the outlier. We're the only one where it's very, very easy for those people to get weapons of mass destruction, if you will, that can take out 17 people in a school in 4 minutes. Until we address that, we're getting nowhere on this issue. And I again applaud the young people who are refusing to let this issue go away. I mean, typically what happens in this country is we have a mass shooting. It's in the media for 24 hours. The politicians tell us it's time to grieve. It's not time to have the debate. And then we never have the debate. These kids have said never again. They are devoting literally the rest of their lives to making sure that we do something. And, of course, they've got the National March planned on March 24th, that I think is going to be one of the hugest rallies in Washington. And we'll see if our politicians in Washington and in state capitals can get up the courage to take on a special interest group.
Meanwhile, Governor Scott Walker called for a special session of the legislature to pass a $100 million school safety plan for the state. We're talking about it on Week in Review. Keen Winters and Tony Palmieri stay with us. Keen coordinates the center-right coalition of WASA. Tony Palmieri is communication studies professor, UW Oshkosh, gathering your thoughts as well on the week's developments at 800-642-1234. What needs to be done to make schools safer in Wisconsin? Do you agree with Governor Walker to hold a special session? Do you support the closure of the state's youth prison, Lincoln Hills? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back in just a moment here for more Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Week in Review as we facilitate discussion around the state on national developments that grabbed headlines this week, also grabbed our attention. Keen Winters, Tony Palmieri are our guides. Keen is coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Tony is a professor at UW Oshkosh and a blogger. Getting your thoughts on the week's news, 800-642-1234. As we explore a special session in Wisconsin, Governor Walker calling for a special session on gun violence. Where do you come down on it? 800-642-1234. So one day after these walkouts, Governor Walker calls on lawmakers to take up a $100 million legislative package aimed at providing more security in school buildings around the state. Among other things, this package would offer grants to schools on a one-time basis to help pay for security improvements. It does not include mandatory universal background checks for firearm purchases, nor does it raise the minimum age to buy guns from 18 to 21. So, Keen, will this proposal make schools safer? Do you see this special session that could come? Could it be productive?
Yes, I think it could be very productive, and really hardening the defenses of schools are the key. And my heart goes out to our last caller here. I think he shared with us a very significant personal story. And what you have to take from that story is we ask people, if you see something, say something. But until you have a security regime at the school in place that can handle those complaints, if I'm going to essentially rat out someone who's planning violence, boy, I got to know that that person's going to be taken care of and that I'm not going to be essentially setting myself up to be the victim of violence. And so I think the governor's proposal, working with the Department of Justice to get grants, to get schools thinking about this, to get schools to do threat assessments and build that security regime is right on target. I don't think you can pass the 21-year-old, but I'm sure it would be ruled unconstitutional. You can't take away people's rights based on age.
Let's go to Joan in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Scott Walker cut $1.6 billion from K-12 education in 2011, and now Scott Walker wants to give $100 million to increase K-12 safety. Well, I'm not sure, where was Scott Walker after the Sandy Hook shooting? There have been many, many shootings since that time, and Scott Walker has not gotten on the state stage or national stage, but here he is saying he wants to increase school safety by $100 million. I think it's an election year stunt. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
Well, Joan sees this as an about-face. Keen Winters, what do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I think she's grossly misinformed to say that $101.6 billion was cut from K-12 education. That's simply not true. And So I have to just dismiss the call.
Tony, is this a turnaround on the part of the governor here?
Somewhat. I mean, I actually do like the idea of creating an Office of School Safety. I think that'll provide more accountability in government. But I think Mr. Walker, like all Republican governors, is under this powerful constraint of not being able or willing to stand up to the lobby And so we get these proposals that are just so lacking in what we need to do. And even if you thought that his suggestions about increasing school safety were sound, $100 million one time, if you took the sheer number of schools in our state and did the math, this averages out to about $32,000 per school, which is basically a dent in the issue. So he's not able to take on a special interest, and the money he wants to allocate to this is far, far short of what it needs to be. I mean, Tony Evers, who's running for governor on the Democratic side, I think has already said, if you want to do this proposal, at least have a steady stream of funding that'll keep it going well into the future, because a one-time funding really doesn't do anything meaningful.
Let's bring in Michael in Madison to the conversation. Michael, hi.
Hi, how you doing? So I just have a couple comments I'd like to make and hear everybody's opinion on this. We're an intelligent country. You know, I went to med school. I'm a physician. We have a lot of very intelligent people in this country. We have prospective data, meaning that people have looked at after gun regulation has been put in place in other countries, including Japan, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, and which has shown that gun control reduces mass shootings. The last mass shooting at a school in the United Kingdom was in 1996. This is 8,000 days prior, greater than 8,000 days ago. We do not have the funds to arm schools, and to me, in all honesty, that is not the solution. Because somebody, as in what happened down in Florida recently, you had officers that were there who were not willing to even go in and confront an active shooter. Why is that? Because a person has access to very, very heavy artillery. And to me, there should be no reason that we have access to this these weapons.
Mike?
And just one more point.
Okay, quickly.
Mental illness is everywhere. Japan, Canada, America. Everybody has mental illness. Every country deals with it. The difference is the access to weapons. And I'll hang up now. Thank you so much.
Michael, thanks. Back-to-back calls here. Chris in Milwaukee, go ahead.
Hey, yeah. Hi there. Yeah.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, hey, I just called. So I consider myself to be left-leaning, a little bit of a libertarian bent. But I guess my problems with the gun control legislation that's being called for is that the vagueness of the term assault rifle and really the lack of it being sort of a pragmatic term. I mean, the fact of the matter is anyone who actually has utilized firearms knows that an assault rifle is just basically, it's an ugly looking rifle. I mean, they put a bunch of black plastic on it. You might have a folding stock or something of that nature. Fundamentally, if you get rid of those, it's not going to make any sort of like major changes. I mean, during the last assault rifle ban, you know, you didn't see a dramatic drop in these kinds of mass shootings or anything of that nature. You did see a drop in gun violence overall, and you can continue to see a drop in gun violence overall. It has not gone up in the last, I think, 30 years. But I would argue that's more because of economic policies and primarily more related to the inner city.
Chris,
in terms of school safety, you see far more issues in inner cities than you do. And again, that's economics. That's not related to the actual guns themselves. I mean, I don't know.
Chris, thanks for those observations. And Tony and Keen, I want to get some final conclusions here before we move on. Tony, you first, after hearing from Chris and Michael.
You know, I thought Michael made a great point that, you know, we're an intelligent country, and here's the problem. The United States Congress, the Republican majority, will not even allow the Center for Disease Control to study gun violence as a public health hazard. It's almost like we are burying our heads in the sand. I think Michael was correct. There are things we can do here. You know, look, in just 2018 alone, we've already had almost 3,000 gun deaths in this country. Something needs to be done, and something needs to be done soon. Kids are leading the way.
Keen Winters, you go ahead after hearing thoughts from Chris and Michael.
I think a special session proposing $100 million is to start out is a good first step It's a tangible step in addressing the problem. There'll be future budgets and times to consider making funding permanent, but I think it's a good first step, and I'm glad to see that we're doing it.
Well, a plan to close the state's troubled youth prison could now be in jeopardy due to a split among Republicans who control the Senate and the state assembly. The Senate and assembly both agree that Lincoln Hills should close, but what comes after that is another question. Keene, how would you like to see state lawmakers proceed on Lincoln Hills?
Well, I did like the assembly version, and I think, look, putting 234 of the worst kids, grade 6 through 12 in one facility has turned out to be a really, really bad idea. And but you still have great infrastructure up at Lincoln Hills. It's not far from where I live, and it's not far from where I own some hunting land. And so to make use of that in the correctional system going forward, you also have a good cadre of employees up there that you could use. I wouldn't waste those resources. I would roll those into the correctional system, but I think we have to really divide up that population and deal with it in a different way.
Well, Tony, if lawmakers can't get behind a plan before the end of the session next week, is this something worth going into special session to take care of? Do you think that would happen?
I think special session would be needed for something like this. But, this was a rare example of where we had huge bipartisan support in the assembly to, decentralize it into the counties. And the Senate Republicans, for some reason, are holding this back. I think what we really need is Governor Walker to use his leadership here. I mean, during Act 10, there were lots of Republicans who were somewhat concerned about it. He got them all on board. I think it's time for Governor Walker to get with the Republicans in the Senate and say, we need this, and we need this now. I think this really is a test of the governor's leadership at this point.
And finally, Keene, what do you make of the Senate not going with the assembly version?
I just don't know. I don't know the motivation behind it. I thought the assembly version was a good proposal. It's clear the governor supported it. Hard to understand sometimes.
All right. Well, bonus last question, guys. It's official March Madness season. NCAA basketball tournament kicked off this week, although it's the first time in a while Wisconsin team doesn't make the bracket. Tony, will you be watching, and who are you pulling for?
With the Badgers out of it, I kind of lost my motivation, and my bracket is already busted, but I'm going to predict Duke.
Okay, you're going safe. All right, Keene Winters, how about you?
Well, I guess Tony and I have some agreement on this. Without the Badgers in it, interest is not what it was.
Man, poor losers. I don't know.
It's nice to have a march off once in a while.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us today. Keene Winters is a small business owner from Schofield and coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Tony Palmieri, professor of communication studies at UW-Oshkosh. He blogs at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. This Week in Review was produced by Chris Molina and Keely Boltina. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You find Week in Review right here on the Ideas Network. Have a great weekend.